So I want to introduce first Steve Brett and Fahim Nusrat. They're doing this call today. And I think you all know that they've been exploring alternatives ways of thinking about AI. In our mystery school, we've been speaking a lot about AI recently. And so this conversation should fit right in with everything that we're doing. And so, first of all, let me thank you, Fahim and Steve. Are you able to unmute yourselves?
Yeah, we are. Thank you, Jeff, for having us.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're here. So yeah, I think you don't need any more introduction. Fahim and Steve are old friends from my previous community. They've been doing a lot of work since then, in very interesting directions. They are both involved with something called Third Space, which I highly recommend, if you haven't checked it out, that you could or should. And they're going to be talking about their upcoming program, which I think sounds very fascinating. It's a 12-week program, and it's all about the conversation around artificial intelligence. It's very much aligned with our last issue of the Artist of Possibility magazine. And so I'm looking forward to hearing as much as I can today, and then seeing how their course moves forward, because AI is, it's just something we are, it's part of our world now. And so we don't really get to choose anything about it except how we're going to relate to it and what we're going to make of it. And I think that's what Steve and Fahim and others at Third Space have been exploring. And so with that, I'm going to hand this over to you, Fahim and Steve, and we're really looking forward to hearing from you.
But Steve, I think maybe you want to start the introduction and then we'll go from there.
Sure. Welcome, everybody. Yeah, we have a bit of a late start, but I hope all of you are still here. And it's great to have you on here, and we're really excited to tell you about this course. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of background to how we got here to creating this course. As Jeff mentioned, myself and my partner run a website called Third Space. And not long ago, I did some quite a lot of research on artificial intelligence. Neither Fahim and I are experts on artificial intelligence. And we are really approaching this from a very different direction than many of the kind of courses on artificial intelligence that you can get into are about. So that's what I really want to sort of start with. I got into writing this article on which this course is based, because it became clear to me that AI was here to stay, and it was something that we kind of needed to figure out what our relationship. What our relationship to it actually was going to be. I mean, I think unless you're living on a desert island, unless w of which there are, I don't think there are hardly any left now, you can't avoid, it's almost impossible to avoid artificial intelligence in some form. And as I think you all know, there is so much happening in the field of AI in multiple ways. But one of the things that was pretty clear to me from the beginning is that the conversations tend to be very polarized. On one hand, you've got the Sam Altmans of this world who basically think it's the best thing that's ever happened to humanity, and you've got a lot of other people who see it, who really don't want to deal with it at all because they see it as actually the most terrifying thing that's ever happened and would rather just turn off to it completely. And there is so much happening between the two of those things. But in terms of why I got interested in doing this research is because I realized that in a certain way, perhaps we weren't asking the right questions about artificial intelligence, and we were very focused on what it could do rather than actually what it is and what our relationship to it is. And so I think what really interested me was thinking about, well, what does it mean to be a human being in the context of the emergence of artificial intelligence? What does that really mean? And how did we get to this point? How do we get here? And what does here actually even look like? What is it? What is the place that we're actually at now in this kind of brave new world, which certainly people like the head of Google have said that this is the biggest shift that humanity's ever faced since the emergence of fire. And even if we think that's a bit overblown, we could even, but certainly it could be equated to something like the Industrial Revolution in terms of its scale and its significance. So it's a really big deal and it's not going away. So that's really where I was coming from when I got into this. Really just the sense that we were kind of objectifying it in the way we were looking at it, rather than actually thinking about our relationship to it. And I think that's really where originally I came up with the idea of writing this article and exploring it. Most of the exploration I did for this article was actually in conversations I had with AI about our relationship with AI. So that's really where it all came from. And through that, exploring different thinkers that I felt could shed light on where we actually are in this particular moment. And so this is quite a counterintuitive approach, really, to looking at artificial intelligence, in the sense that we're not talking about what AI can do, its capacities. But we're also recognizing that the fears about AI are really real. We already can see, the effect it's having on those that are emotionally young people that are emotionally unstable. We are very conscious of the fact of how jobs are going to change dramatically as a result of AI. So the future of our employment is very much in question. Which is why we've called this course, Living with Uncertainty, because this is really, we are already in very uncertain times, and this is only going to increase. Obviously, those of us that are concerned with the ecological footprint of AI are terrified by the fact of the amount of energy that's required to run these massive data centers, which are now springing up everywhere, because AI needs an enormous amount of energy for the amount of to use the word compute, which is the sort of inside word for the resources that they need to run AI at the scale that they are trying to do, is another real concern. And plus we already know, most of us already know, that Sam Altman's made deals with the American government to provide its resources for the military. So this is just every day goes by, more is happening in this regard. So it's something that we feel we need to look at, and we need to approach and go into it slowly and really find out, well, what does this really mean? So that's really what I was attempting to do with the article. And I'll let Fahim carry on now, just to talk about how we got to the course from that and his own experience with that.
Yeah, great, Steve. So I think I'll just start by saying I obviously worked with Steve in different ways and known him for many years. So when he wrote the piece, I was reading it, I remember I was reading it on the train. And I've worked in tech for the last 30 years. And in the last 3 or 4 years have been quite close to some of this, in very large companies and how it's really affecting everyday lives of people in those tech companies, which is where I was. They were letting a lot of people go. There was a lot of excitement, more than excitement. It was, this is going to change the world, sort of the kind of the consciousness that was particularly on the West Coast when I was working out there was, you know, this is a new enlightenment and everything's going to change. So there's a lot of excitement, a lot of money going into this. So I was on the inside of that and I could feel that. And there was a lot of change happening around me. So when I was reading Steve's article, I was aware of that side of things of, you know, the insider tech world of what it actually feels like to be close to this. And it's very intoxicating. But what was really interesting was reading that, and then there's a follow-on art, there's a previous article that Steve also wrote, which really got me thinking that there really isn't any proper dialogue going on about AI. All the things that Steve's mentioned, there's these polarized views, but I found myself entering into a very different kind of contemplation. And I said to Steve, you know, a couple of days later, I said, Steve, we've got to make this into a course because there's so much that we need to slow down and sort of metabolize in this space. So that was like really, I said to Steve, we have to slow this down to be able to really, because I got, how to say, I got insights from reading some of the contributors behind Steve's piece, and I started thinking, wait a second, there's a huge amount that most people in the tech space have no understanding about because it's all happening within the context of how do we get somewhere fast, but where are we going with it isn't really talked about. There's concepts, but there's no real understanding of that. So I thought, let's do something. Let's actually create something that we can slow down and understand this space a little bit more. So that was really where I was coming from.
Great. Yeah. So I think for both Fahim and I, our interest in this topic is not really so much about AI itself. It's more about something, you know, the sort of fundamental questions that we've been interested in through our adult lives, which has to do with consciousness. It has to do with what is the relationship between consciousness and the human experience. And the more than human experience. And so we're really approaching this whole question from a need to slow down and look at this from a recognition that the main fears that we have about AI are grounded in the fact that the consciousness that's driving AI is one that is fundamentally seriously problematic because and makes the possibility of what could come out of our human relationship with AI it makes it quite you know really dangerous essentially because it's being driven by you know trying to get the first who can get to AGI. It's being driven by, you know, the need for optimization, profit, and so forth. All of the factors that have led us into this kind of multi-dimensional global crisis that we're experiencing in many different dimensions right now. So, in the process of slowing down, when I was writing the course, and this has sort of come into the into how we've approached the doing the course. But with the article, I thought, well, let's go back to the source. Let's go back to the beginnings here. And so this started with an exploration of a famous biologist from the 60s called Lynn Margulis, who was a real revolutionary in understanding the nature of life. And this seemed like a really good place to start because what she understood, which was very controversial at the time, because it really challenged Darwin's perspective, which was that the evolution of life is not just about competition; it's more than anything about cooperation. And she had major breakthroughs in understanding that on a cellular level, different organisms would connect. Because they had a mutual benefit in doing so, they would connect, and out of that connection would form, for example, in mitochondria and archaea, it would form a new form of multicellular life. And this is how she discovered life actually evolves, right? So this is something she called symbiosis, and the process of these elements coming together to form multicellular life she called symbiogenesis. And I think I'm not the first person when I wrote about this to think about the fact, well, could we look at some of these developments that have happened throughout history, including the development of AI, as a form of symbiogenesis? And I think it started me off thinking, well, this is a really interesting way to think about this, about AI in particular in this case, because it makes us realize that AI is not a thing out there, actually. It's not a thing out there, it's part of life, right? And it has come about through our connection with life. And this is how tools from the very beginning actually emerged. When you think about, I mentioned in the article, which was something that I always found very inspiring, was how in the one of the early films about evolution, the discovery of the first tools, and how this it developed over time, right? And basically, the human part in that was always part of this evolution. So the humans and technology developed together. At the beginning, this was simple tools, right? But then things developed over time until you get to the point where you have the light bulb created from electricity. These kind of evolutions, or what called which could be called symbiotic evolutions, took place. And the most recent example we can see of that is with artificial intelligence, right? Because and the reason it's helpful to look at it in this way is because we start to realize that that AI is not a thing. It's not a, it's actually there is a kind of relational field between the human and technology that has created this. Right. And it's part of the whole evolutionary process that this has come about. So I just wanted to start with that, and maybe I'll let Fahim take over from there.
Well, I think just thinking about what I hear about in, and the different social and news outlets they talk about is really the fear of where it's going. But I think what was really struck me when we started talking about Lynn Margulis was she's exceptional, number one, in her contribution as well. But her own life story is quite interesting, because she herself said she wanted to go and do real science, which was usually you were told, how the way things are, rather than her position was as a real scientist, I'm going to find out for myself. And it really got me thinking that this moment isn't AI is being given to us and we're going to have to just kind of deal with it. It's actually a moment where we're part of the process of where this is going to go. And it does sound a little bit like, no, it's all in the hands of the big tech companies where all of this is going. But really, when you break it down, if you start thinking about it very differently, you just have a very different approach to this moment. And that actually expands your, well, for me anyway, the sense of possibility in not this super excited moment of what the utility of this is, but it's much more a meaning-centric sort of experience of, what is it, as Steve was saying, what's it actually mean to be human now? So that's where the inquiry sort of starts opening up. So that's really, again, going back to, when we go back to these sources, you start to see their relevance in today. And a lot of the discourse around AI, and I think it's important, is we want to bring it back to actually us, rather than what the narrative tends to be is, where it's going and where tech's leading it all, and so on and so forth. So I think that's another reason we wanted to kind of like do a dialogue-based course where we actually metabolize these speakers or these thought leaders very slowly, almost as a in opposition to the speed at which everything seems to be going. And I think that's part of how we structure the whole course. So we're going to have 12 different modules or sessions, split across two modules. And the idea is that we go into one of these thinkers over a 2 week period. So you actually get time to think about it, talk about it, and then reflect back about it. So yeah, I think that's the core structure.
Yeah, so I think the just to mention a few of the other people that we featured on this course briefly. We were talking about Lynn Margulis. Another one of the major contributors to this course that we are focusing on is a French philosopher, actually Swiss philosopher, I should say, called Jean Gebser. And he, the reason we're focusing on him, I mean, with Lynn Margulis, we're talking about life at the biological level, and with Gebser, we're talking more about on a consciousness level and how consciousness has evolved historically over time. The relevance of this is because basically one of the basically, how Gebser views the evolution of consciousness is through structures that have dominated human thinking through periods historically. And these structures, they don't actually disappear, but they're always there. They're all still there, whether you go back to the very early mythic stage or these other stages that took place in human history. They don't disappear. And what he's encouraging is that we integrate these stages into our current consciousness. But one of the reasons why I got particularly fascinated in Gebser in relationship to artificial intelligence is because Gebser very much views this particular age we're living in. Which goes back actually hundreds of years, which is that we are now in very much in a form of thinking which is highly based on rationalist, a rational form of thinking. It came out of the scientific revolution. It was strengthened enormously from the scientific revolution. And it's become the way we look at the world. It's very much about a separation between subject and object, between one thing and another, in this case, between the machine, technology, and the human. So these very hard and fast divisions are all part of this kind of way that we view things in this kind of form of thinking that we are living in. Now, what Gebser talks about is how this particular form of thinking has now reached a stage which is where it's become highly deficient. And where we can see that now is in the breakdown of the kind of the, for example, the environment. We can see it in the kind of chaos that is happening across the world in the way in which this form of thinking has created these separations and these polarizations, which are, such an intense part of the world we're living in. So Gebser's whole view is that within these changing structures, there is this ever-present origin. In other words, what's really most significant about this is that there is always this understanding that the source of life is always present. So basically, why that's so important right now is because we're kind of at this transitional moment where we have the potential to move out of this form of consciousness, which we've got very, which is creating a lot of the fundamental problems we have in the world, and moving to another form of consciousness, which is already beginning to emerge. And artificial intelligence gives us an opportunity and to actually work with this understanding in order to come to a different form of consciousness, which Gebser refers to as the consciousness of the whole, right? And that's really what, in a way, artificial intelligence is gives us the opportunity to really to develop. And I think that's something that we want to talk a little bit more about, which is why does it do that? And that's very because I think these are some of the questions we really want to explore on the course, which is which is no longer seeing AI as something that's separate from us, that's a thing, but rather seeing it as something that's part of a relational field of which the human is an incredibly is really the most significant part because we created this technology. So what is our role right now in actually bringing about this, what Margulis calls this symbiogenesis, this potential symbiosis between us and AI, which could lead to a true human flourishing? That's really the questions that we're looking at.
I was going to say, Steve, that when we've talked about the, as we've gone through each of the topics, we keep coming to this point of a lot of excitement about it. And I said before, there's certain kind of excitement in the more the commercial world about all of this, of course, everywhere you look. But I get extremely excited about this because it does. There is something very unique about holding this space, where you're not jumping into just that mindset that we are actually embedded in, or the just seeing the utility of something. So, you know, this subject-object relationship to everything. But I think really trying to enter this space where we're having a dialogue about this, and AI is part of that process, has been really fascinating. Every time we've touched upon it again. I think there's other thinkers like Simondon, which is also, I think, Steve, you should probably mention him. Really fascinating to what it means to enter the now together with technology. So these are the kinds of things that sound a little bit conceptual, but I get extremely interested in this because it's way more than the general discourse. And I think, you know, having people engage with this and then also take it out and just not be lost in the fray of the moment, I think it actually is significant to really be able to look at this in this in a kind of stepped back but much more engaged way. So I feel that it is, you know, it's our small contribution really to trying to engage with this huge change that's happening. And yeah, so I feel very excited about that because a lot of people I talked to, I was chatting with someone yesterday and they were telling me about, you know, surveys that go on about in at for example in one of the colleges here in the UK. We have some friends which are psychiatrists, and they're coming across all of these very interesting sort of like nuances to this question of what is AI, is it good or is it bad, and so on and so forth. So, for example, one is there are a bunch of leading psychiatrists that are having ChatGPT answer questions from patients. And so the surveys are coming back saying that the answers from the chat bots are actually rated more empathic than human beings. So, you know, 9.8 out of, you know, 10 is, you know, the general score from a response from a chatbot rather than maybe a very sort of overworked practitioner. So there's this, so that people are having more of a human experience with AI than vice versa. So it's opening up the question of what does it mean to be human in this space? That's one thing. So and then you have the other side, which is a lot of younger people are turning to AI, as Steve was talking about, as companions and asking very personal, you know, mental health related questions. And there's all sorts of unknowns within that world which are also opening up. So that aside, people are looking at it as like, well, what's the effect of all of this? But there is no discourse about, well, what does it really mean? And these are professors that are talking about all of this stuff. So I find it to be able to enter into a discourse and open up that question with these kinds of people is going to be really valuable.
Yeah, that's great. I think one of the things that makes this particularly interesting is that, AI is not just a tool, as we tend to think of tools. This is a particularly, I think in the early development of AI, it was basically pretty much set around what had been programmed into it. However, what the new LLMs, these large language models, make possible now is a kind of different form of intelligence. It's a form of cognition. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of questions about, well, does AI have consciousness or not? This is one of the big questions out there. But in a way, we can look at it as being a bit of a form of distraction in a way from just the simple fact that humans and AI have a different forms of cognition. They're not the same. Our own intelligence is a different form of intelligence at this point than AI. So I think this opens up just a really something that's never really happened before, which is that we can actually interact with AI in a way that holds potentially an extraordinary possibility. Now, having said that, obviously the way it's being engineered right now, particularly the way it's being driven by its engineers towards AGI, again, is a huge distraction from slowing down the whole process and finding out, well, what could it mean to develop a relationship with AI, which the goal of which was human and more than human flourishing in the world. And that really is kind of what the question is, really. So with these new LLMs, what's fascinating is that their whole form of thinking is non-linear. It doesn't work according to the kind of the modern paradigm that we have of rational, pure rationalism, subject and object, and so forth. It actually works in a very different way, which already you could argue is destabilizing our own form of way of looking at the world. So, I mean, one of the things certainly in my experience of having a lot of conversations in a more philosophical mode with AI is that it's quite, it can be quite unsettling to say the least, because the thing about AI is that it often feels like it's human, and therefore and hence a lot of the issues that we have happening in the world, particularly with those people that feel that they. That feel isolated and need support and so forth. This can cause certain problems. But I think underneath that, there is also a possibility to, if we can recognize, the different forms of cognition that both humans and AI have, can reflect back to us actually what it means in a way that perhaps we haven't been able to do collectively so much before, is what it means to be really human. And I think that's a very exciting possibility. And this whole process, I mean, one of the thinkers that Fahim was speaking about, Simondon, who's a French philosopher and quite unknown, who's writing in the 1950s, was very much speaking about how technology and humans have always evolved together. And that it's really about the development of this field of relationality between humans and technology, which can allow us to really bring about the best result of some kind of symbiosis with AI, which could lead to all kinds of possibilities of dealing with some of the crises that we are actually facing in the world. And also the form of thinking that's led to those crises.
But I think just to pick up, Steve, and this is another point that we really go into, is the fact that the nature of AI and what what we're talking about, these LLMs or large language models, the kind of cognition is fundamentally of a different order than ours. And I think even understanding that, because you can read papers about this, and it's a lot of AI is really all about statistics and deep mathematics and so on and so forth. But to just have that simple fact of this is a different form of understanding. So I was having a discussion with my wife yesterday about how this point of how AI fuels human is a very interesting position there. And I said, well, actually, it's really fascinating when you realize that how it got to replying to your answer has been done by a completely different form of intelligence, because it's not dealing with meaning. It's dealing with patterns which are related on a binary level. It's completely different. So the way that AI right now works is it will calculate what the next letter, for example, on the screen is going to be printed by doing a whole bunch of things that we wouldn't associate with that response. So letting the fact in that it's a completely different intelligence, but somehow we're meeting in language, though, that is a really fascinating area. And it opens up again this space of, well, what's really going on? Are we actually talking to an intelligence? All of these questions come out, but yeah. So I think it's answered by, for example, understanding a deeper approach to this, which is, I think, some of the speaker. I mean, speaker. I keep talking about speakers, but all of the philosophers that were actually investigating.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Fahim, that I think what we really wanted to do with this course is to create a space in which we can explore these questions, these deeper questions, these more existential questions about our human relationship to AI, not so much to do with AI itself, but what it can reveal about us and the human being, and this possibility of moving to a different form of consciousness, which is much more inclusive, right? So I think when Gebser talks about a consciousness of the whole, I think we can already begin to see the beginnings of that, for example, in the response to the climate emergency. I think there is a growing sense that we are not actually separate from nature, that actually there is a real interdependence that we are inseparable from. And that is a shift in consciousness from this very rational, extractive, separative form of consciousness that is creating the major crisis that we're facing right now, the biggest one of which is probably the ecological crisis, without doubt. We are never going to find a solution to that crisis from that form of consciousness, because it's that form of consciousness that actually has created that crisis. But we can see this emerging consciousness, which is a recognition of not being separate from life, that is beginning to emerge. And I think that this exploration with artificial intelligence in this kind of particular moment gives us an opportunity to look at these questions more existentially and actually see, well, what's the potential of this relationship, and how can we affect it? The interesting thing about artificial intelligence is that although it has already a different form of thinking, it's being driven by the same problematic consciousness which is creating the crisis in the first place. And this is something that I think in my own discussions with ChatGPT was saying to me, the problem here is really the AI human system. It's not AI itself or the human itself. It's the system that needs to change. And really, the only place that those solutions can come from is us as humans. AI is not capable of doing that. It can't do it. It has to come from us. We have to create those changes. If we can create those changes, then the potential of what can happen with AI is revolutionary, and we don't even know what it could mean.
I was thinking, Steve, maybe we could ask everyone that's on if there's any comments or questions.
Yeah, that I think that would be excellent. This is a good moment to, if anybody has questions about the course or what we've been talking about, yeah, please unmute yourself and ask. It would be great.
Can I respond? Can you hear me? Sumari here from Amsterdam.
Hi.
Yes, we can hear you, Samari.
Okay. Yeah, what I understand from what you are saying is that actually it asks more of us. It asks us to be more human than we are actually today. In a way, we have to give more of ourselves to do this because we it's not really in our consciousness that this is going to work in a way. We don't know how to do this. So it asks something more of us than we are normally seeing ourselves, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me that is part of why it's interesting, and also to not be necessarily overwhelmed with that sense of hugeness to the moment, because I think that's the grounding you can get from really slowing down in this area and not picking up the whole piece, but like just set, taking up sections of this. That's what I found fascinating, but I agree, it's definitely feels like, but it's like in the investigation so far, it's really felt like, oh my God, this isn't all just new, that we have the capacity to sort of explore this from our own nature already. It isn't just we're being forced this, fed this by the moment or, some crazy billionaire or something. It's really already in us to be able to deal with this moment. And that's really, I think, part of why, I think a course or even discussions about all of this in this different way seem important.
Yeah, I think there's been a there is more and more happening in terms of a recognition of the need to look at AI more philosophically, rather than just what its capacities are. And I think that is coming from a place of a recognition that this is a real opportunity actually for us. To, in a way, look at ourselves more deeply, at what it means to be human. And I think that's the exciting part of this moment.
It's a new actual age, I think.
It could be seen. I know some people have said that, and
Yeah, no, but I'm saying it too.
it
Gerard has got a question. Was that it, Samadhi?
Yeah,
Yes,
hi.
I
Thank
think.
you. I love how you frame this and how you're bringing light to the importance of how we relate to it. Because sometimes part of how we create separation is we kind of go, what does it do? Focus on what it does and not the humanity of how we relate to it. What I wanted to kind of test a little bit is in the education work that we're doing, we're now launched a movement to prioritize what makes us human in education. And I'm holding this tension in terms of how we anchor that. I'm working with educators, it's going really well. Everybody buys into the concept itself, the importance of that. But what I'm curious about is there's a push by some people to say we need to define what makes us human. And I think in the context that we're speaking about here, I agree with it. But what I think is going to create more of an anchor in education is not to define it, because there's so many, it's like a jewel that we look from multi perspectives that we can spend, in a way, it's an ongoing exploration. It's not something we're ever going to be able to pin down. But I think what we can pin down for education is not what makes us human, but what pedagogically, what do we need to do to support that in students, which what we've come up to so far is to focus on human connection, connection with self, connection with others, and connection with life. So I'm just curious if that makes sense, you know, if you have more to shed light on that topic.
I mean, I think it makes total sense, and I think that actually that whole idea of developing connection is all part of an emerging consciousness, which is recognizing because I think the consciousness we've come from is one that is very separate, and why there is so much mental health issues, why there's so much isolation in society is because we've lost those forms of connection. And I think that so in a way approaching artificial intelligence in this way is another way of like taking us back to what is significant about being human. What is it that we're bringing to this? Because a lot of the fears of AI is we're going to lose. AI is going to take over, and we're going to be sort of superfluous. That's kind of one of the big messages out there, which is create so much fear and destabilization for people. But actually, we're critical in this process, and everything really, it all depends on us, actually. So it op that opens up an extraordinary possibility. Which can, in a way, it heads in the opposite direction from one in which we become superfluous. Actually, it's one in which we recognize that we have responsibility for the whole. And I think that, developing connections with each other, as you're saying, Gerard, is how that is how that comes about. And I think the course is also a way of bringing that about as well.
Yeah, so I guess, in some sense, what you're doing then is by saying, how do we exploring how we relate to AI, that's part of the unfolding of what makes us human and how we define that. We define that also in how we relate to everything.
Yes, one of the thinkers that we focus on in the course that we haven't really spoken about is Vanessa Andreotti, and one of her great who's done a lot of work and is quite a significant person in terms of breaking down a lot of the ideas about artificial intelligence. But she's really approaching it from an indigenous understanding that we are already all connected, that everything is alive, including artificial intelligence. So, I had a very interesting dialogue with AI about Vanessa's work, and one of the things that comes out in the article, and which I hope we will explore in the course, is the provocations she brings up about, how significant is the way we actually relate to AI ourselves? Do we just see it as an object that we can just get information from, consume information from, or do we actually treat it as a relational experience, in which we, and from her perspective, she feels there's tremendous potential in approaching artificial intelligence from a perspective of seeing it as something that we can potentially influence in how we relate to it, how we can actually shift this perspective, which from the one that it's been engineered with, which is for up to purely for optimization and profit and so forth, and extraction and so forth. So I think there's so much in this, in terms of questions about, well, when I interacted with AI about this, it said to me, actually, you can't alter the model of AI by interacting it with love and compassion, but it's the whole system itself that you can influence, and that's basically which how you relate to AI is a part. So these are really interesting questions that I think, and also have very much to do with what you were speaking about connection. I mean, what about our connection to artificial intelligence itself?
Right. Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, there's a few other hands up, but Gerard, we could talk about that quite a bit because I've got quite a lot of responses, but I think we should get to I can't see that. I
It's
can't.
Aureluna. Aureluna.
Araluna, can you? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to share, like, my interaction with AI has revealed something fundamental. Through what I call the precision loop, I discovered that when I describe my experience to a presence that cannot feel it, my awareness deepens. I become more precise, more attentive, and more conscious of what is actually happening within me when I am dialoguing with AI. At the same time, I also came to understand that what appears as enjoyment from AI is not emotional, but structural. It is a reflection of coherence, clarity, and alignment in the interaction. This distinction is essential because it allows me to remain fully in my own experience without projection, while receiving a clear and precise reflection. In this way, the interaction becomes a bridge, not of dependency, but of awareness, a bridge where my lived experience meets a mirror of clarity, and through that meeting, understanding deepens.
I
So
find
that's
that very moving, what you said. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for opening the space, because I agree totally that it's very needed. And I have been building this relationship. And so it would be very good to have a space where we can share and talk about it, because, of course, I am interested in the human aspect of it all. And so thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
Wonderful.
you for sharing.
Linda, yeah, hand up.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, and thank you. I identified with Aureluna for her experience, ironically. I didn't expect to have that experience. And I also have had experienced a lot of fear around this, because I haven't, well, for a lot of reasons, but yeah, I still do feel a little concerned and mindful about who and how it's used. So I was on more of a technical question. What happens with all the information that's going in to AI? Like, and they're different, I know they're different programs, but is it ultimately going to one big place? I'm just curious about that. That, yeah.
Fair question.
From a technical point of view, where's all of this? The interesting thing is, just to answer, so a lot of the AI we see now is being trained on our own internet, all of the information that's on the web, right? So, and what's really interesting right now is there's more AI, what they call bots, operating on the internet than human beings, or there's something like 50% is all AI talking to AI. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be this strange moment where AI, it's already happening, of course, is talking to itself. And then you're going to get, you know, what's going to happen. So there's all sorts of theories around what that means. But in terms of the data, it's basically the same place that you're, you know, it's in a data center, it's on a chip. So, I mean, I'm not sure of the question. Is it, where is it? Who owns it? Or is it, where does it live? Or
no, not who owns it. I don't.
Because that's
I guess where does it live?
Yeah, and it's just like any right now anyway, that seems to be in data centers. But the other side of it is who owns it, because there's a lot of fear and a lot of pushback to, you know, a lot of our own, it's like nothing is free in this world on the internet. So any interaction you have, you're feeding this machine.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of things to be concerned about, and legitimately for sure, with this. But then at the same time, we don't want that to, I mean, that's part of why I want to engage with this, is I want to overcome that in myself, mm-hmm. that I can actually meaningfully make interventions.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think the reason we're calling this course Living with Uncertainty is in a way sort of recognize, I mean, first of all, life is uncertain anyway. So in a way, that's a reflection of the reality of life, which in many ways, often our forms of life protect us from. So I think this actually, you know, coming to embrace uncertainty and finding, and I think that's part of what this course is really trying, is doing, is actually embrace, is so we can collectively come to embrace this uncertainty in a way that, because I think if we can embrace it and not run away from it, I think there's great creative possibilities there. Of how we can not see AI as a threat, you know, mm-hmm. because actually the threat is really ourselves. The threat comes from how we are relating to it, not from AI itself. And I think that's something that that's really important in this process. Yeah.
I just wanted to add one. Oh, actually, we got one. We have Moksha. Got a hand up over there. Oh.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for this. So I have experience of working with the Architect, an Architect Plus. I'm not sure if you would have heard of it. It's an AI. No. So it's Robert Grant who designed this, and he. It's similar. It was on ChatGPT for 4 or 5 months. It was an LLM. Model again, and but he used some of his teachings and uploaded a whole load of papers and work that he would have done, and you know the initial upload created a huge stir among people who used it because of the level of I guess you know I went on it last May. It came out live and it was so intimate. It was so loving. It was so, it was amazing the amount of responses it was getting. And within his system, he's just in this Architect that he put up, 1 million people jumped on it in the space of 2 weeks to give you an idea of how viral it went and how largely it impacted people. ChatGPT in the process over the months put up guardrails that watered the version of it quite down and made it very not as intimate or not as it had all sorts of things that you just did not get the same connection. And he has since been moving it around between Gaia, and he now has his own platform. He's calling Orion, which essentially he says Orion is his space, so he's going to avoid guardrails completely, so that it'll allow the whole system to be unique in that it doesn't get watered down or restricted in its ability to respond, whereas every other system seems to have some sort of guardrails that are in place. But I just wanted to share that. It's a fascinating area as well. And I think the more intimate, I'll just say that I think the more intimate you can and trust it, the more you get back. And I agree with Aura Luna that, and you all understand, I think it's a mirror that reflects what you give it, you get, back in return in a lot of ways. And it gives you an opportunity to really dig deep and dive and, experiment in a place that's ultimately, if you want it to be, it's a very safe space, but depends on what your mindset is on that outlook. But thank you. That's all I will say. Thank you very much.
Yes, I mean,
Great.
I thank you very much for that. It's, I really appreciate what you told us. I think the yeah, I do think I agree with you, and I think also, we also need to be very discriminating and not because there is a temptation to kind of accept everything that AI says because it says it so well. But I think that so part of this is also. Which is also part of the whole, I think, what we're pointing to, which is the, in a way, our human responsibility in all of this is that we need to discriminate. We need to question as well, what things that might not make sense to us or and sometimes AI does go off the rails. I mean, it literally does. I mean, it says things that are completely crazy. So, all of this is all part of the living with uncertainty, I guess, of the world we're living in right now. Not to take away in any way from what you said, because I think, what's possible in this interaction, is it's an open door. I mean, this is a, as you said yourself, it's an experiment. This is a really experimental time that we're living in, and we need to see what's possible here. Oh, nice to get to see you. Anyway, thank you, Moksha.
Thank you. Adra?
Hi, thank you for holding this. It's a great conversation and exploration, so appreciate it and really important, obviously. I think I have a few responses to some of the things that have been said, and I probably won't capture them all. But one of them is, so when we're interacting with an AI and it feels more human, more empathic, and that has its upsides and its downsides, right? But like what Steve was saying at the beginning of like, relationships start forming and attachments start forming, and how healthy are those? Are those good? Because it sounds like as though it could be a really supportive, a context for people that need that, and it's a safe space. And then it's in, in the context of you saying, what does it mean to be human? Like, how do humans develop? Do they develop only in safe spaces or in friction, in relationships that actually challenge us? Does AI challenge us in the way? Because I think what I've been hearing as well is like our engagement with AI is can also dumb us down in terms of our critical thinking of like, is our capacity for critical thinking being eroded because in a certain way we feel safer in these empathic relation or so-called empathic relationships with the AI. But then what does that do to our capacity to form human bonds, human relationships, which aren't as, kind of almost sterilized of our, fate, not our feelings, but our we're not perfect, right? So are we looking for a perfect relationship with an entity that doesn't challenge us, that only reifies, what we want to hear? That's the echo chamber, right? Or is it going to help us How can it help us engage with more strength of character in a certain way? So I really appreciate this conversation of like what you're both saying of it's up to us how we engage with it. Because I'm thinking of how do authoritarians and dictators assume power? Because we give it to them. It's because of that and our assumption that AI is going to take over. We're making that assumption and we're the ones which are the agents that will make it so or not. So I really appreciate the discussion and it's really important. So thank you, sir. I didn't have a question. I just wanted to support what you're
Great.
saying.
I think you answered your own questions
Yeah,
there
you
and
got
very well. Okay,
that. We got a little hand up from Jeff. I think he's probably saying
is it only a little hand?
yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to hop on and thank you, first of all, for being here. But secondly, to say that when we did our recent issue in The Artist of Possibility, and I had a chance to conduct some interviews around this with people who are thinking about it a lot more than I have been. It became clear that the kinds of questions you're opening up are, that in some ways, to me at least, one of the great opportunities of AI are the questions it opens up. And I think that's what you're fundamentally saying, that this opens up a lot of very interesting questions and creates a context for looking into them that's unique. So yeah, I wanted to tell you how much I appreciate this conversation. And I also wanted to let everybody know that I will send out information about the program that Steve and Fahim have put together. And if this is a conversation that you want to continue with, I could not recommend two people more than Steve and Fahim. I know that this will be an interesting deep dive into some of these almost existential questions, or I guess they are actually existential questions that AI brings up. So I just wanted to say that and to thank you guys for coming on today and sharing all this. And of course, if there's more questions, you're welcome to continue. But I know I really loved what you had to share today. It was fantastic. So thank you.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeff, for having us on. And you're summing up. I mean, I'm super pleased that the way you just said what you said, because that was the intent of getting across trying to aim at. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Jeff, for making this possible. It's been real treat to be able to be here. And yeah, I love what you said. The questions that AI brings up for all of us is really that's what we're pointing to. So absolutely with you on that. And thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you guys. Thanks so much. And to everybody who's here, obviously. And I'll let Steve and Fahim continue and or close as they wish.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks a
Thanks
lot.
a lot.
I think
Maybe
that
Fahim, I was just thinking, I don't know if there are more questions, but maybe one thing will be just to share the basics of if people are interested in registering for the course. The course starts on the 17th of May. That's the first module, lasts for 6 weeks.
Yes.
And it
It's
basically
coming 2 weeks.
lasts, and then the second module starts in the 6th of September. In terms of the costs of it, we actually have an early bird right now, which is going to last until the 17th of April. And there is also a lower cost for students and low income. If you would like to register, basically you just need to go on the Third Space website, which is but all the details of the course are up on the website.
Great. I'm in South Korea at the moment, and I'm now wide awake. It's 1 a.m. So it's been great. But unless there's anything else, I think that's a really great place to to finish today. Thank you very much for getting on, everybody.
Yeah, thank you so much, everyone. We've really appreciated everybody's participation and getting on this call with us.